Hello, my name's Amy, and what you're about to listen to is my interview with Alison Clulo, hairdresser and my mum. We talk about hairdressing as an art form and what it's like competing on the world stage. Hello and welcome to The Voice Podcast. My name's Amy and I'm joined by Alison Clulo, hairdresser and my mum. So first off, tell me a little about your early hairdressing career, because I don't know an awful lot about it.
Well, I went into hairdressing straight from school at 16, where I actually got myself a Saturday job from the age of 13, because I think from that age I knew that's what I wanted to do. So when I was 16, I did my training for a couple of years in a salon close to where I lived. And then I'd heard about competition hairdressing and more artistic type hairdressing. So I made it my plan to try and get a job in a salon that was into competitions and stage work and all that sort of exhibitions. And I went and approached a salon in my hometown and got the job. And I stayed there for about 5 years, worked my way from junior to a stylist, but I had to do lots of training with an artistic team, and got to do junior competition work. And that was pretty much it. So we did lots of competitions all around the UK, which was great. We worked independently and we did team events as well. And there's big trade fairs all around the country. So there was always a massive one at the NEC in Birmingham. We always went to that. And a massive Salon International in London. And we always went as a team. And if there was any competitions, we always entered. And we always did really well, because my boss at the time was in the British hairdressing squad. So at that time, he was competing all over the world. So it was very much built into us as staff that we got involved, which only stood me in good stead, because then I went on to, when I left there, carried on doing competitions on my own and won lots of competitions all around the country, and won lots of awards and medals, and worked very, very hard to get there, and then eventually got recognised and got invited to join the British team myself. So that was a very proud moment for me in my career.
Yeah, when I was little, I remember us winning a lot. But what was your first win, and how did it feel? What category was it in?
It was called the junior blow dry category. And it was at the Tower Ballroom in Birmingham. And I had to find my own model. And it was one of the Saturday girls that worked for us. So she had to have her hair cut and coloured how I wanted to do it. She had no say, bless her. And we practiced for weeks and weeks and weeks, because you're timed. You've got to get your colour just right, and you've got to have something that stands out, so when the judges look at it, it sort of wows the judges. And I remember there being about 30 or 40 other people, all about my age, all in a big long row, all blow drying like mad at the same time. And I won that, so I was absolutely over the moon with that, and had a certificate and a medal, and it got put on display in the salon, and it's just a massive confidence boost for anybody that sort of age that gets involved in any sort of competition to do with their career.
And how different is the competition landscape now compared to when you were competing?
It's changed a lot over the years, because it always all comes down to funding. Our British Hairdressers Federation used to fund a lot of big events all around the country. Competitions and artistic work was very much forefront, and you had big crowds, you had big audiences, lots of people used to enter because it was very well advertised. Now, I think what's happened is in a lot of other businesses, as well as hairdressing, any sort of federation to do with that business has turned into a business model. So the funding goes towards business seminars, salon owners' seminars, rather than the artistic work, and that's a shame. So the competitions around the country, there were all over the country, from Devon and Cornwall right up to, we used to go as far as Scotland, and there was a whole circuit. We probably once a month we had a big competition for quite a few years, and then it all stopped because the format of the British Hairdressing Federation changed, and they made it more for the employer and employment law, tax seminars, VAT seminars, and they took the funding away from the artistic, so the venues couldn't be paid for. There weren't enough people entering to make it viable for the federation. But they weren't advertising it. It wasn't something exciting to get involved in. And that probably happened about 10 years ago. So I had a good 20 years in my career of competing at quite a high level. And we were lucky because a lot of it got, we had to pay a certain amount ourselves because we had to be dedicated to do that. But the help that we used to get from the federation, it's just not there anymore. But there's so many other forums now for people to get involved with. When we did it, there wasn't social media, there wasn't, you know, we had a monthly magazine, and you wanted your pictures to be in the magazine. You wanted your name to be in the magazine. Well, now, as soon as it's happening, it's on Facebook, and within 5 minutes, it's forgot. And I think it's a shame, really. It's not special anymore. There's still European championships and world championships that you can get involved in. And probably pre-COVID, with a group of ex-competitors got together and worked at how can we get it back how it used to be. Getting people excited about it and getting people interested and involved, because other countries can do it. Just our country, we haven't got many takers at the moment for... It's not like salon work. It's very regimented. It's very artistic. You've got to have a real artistic flair to do it. You've got to have an eye for colour, shape, form, textures, because that's what it's judged on. And then if you do go internationally, it's quite a hard regime to compete against other countries, because they are, some of the other countries are absolutely fantastic at it. So people get a little bit disheartened if they haven't trained hard enough or they haven't put enough time aside for it. And it does take a lot of time and effort, and you've got to be really dedicated. And I just think it's a shame that it's not showcased in our country as much as it was. And to see it, you've got to go on the worldwide OMC, which is the World Hairdressing Federation. And if you speak to young hairdressers today, they've never heard of it. They don't know what it is. But when I was training, like, it was your ambition to be part of it. So yeah, that's how it's changed, and it's sad, really.
Yeah, when I was little, I definitely remember going to a competition. Like, it felt like every weekend. But yeah, it's,
and there were hundreds and hundreds of people there.
Speaking about competing abroad, I know you've competed abroad many times. What's it like competing abroad against them on home turf and stuff like that? It must be different than doing just the British circuit.
Well, I think when we were doing the British circuit and we were doing really well and we were winning lots of competitions, I think we sort of felt that we were at the top of our game. And then it's like a sport, it's like anything. You go and compete against another country and you think, oh my God, you know, we've got a lot to compete against here. Countries like Russia, Italy, France, Sweden, they've got teams of hundreds in each category and they just dedicate their lives to it. Unfortunately, we need to earn a living and we have to work. We have to fit it in alongside our salon work. Whereas some of the other countries, they treat it as their competitors are treated like Olympians. So if you make it to their country, say I was competing for, say, the Russian team, I'd probably be taken out of my salon for a good few months building up to that competition. And I would train every day in a group funded by the Russian Federation. And there'd probably be about 100 people in my category. And the ones that cut the mustard will go and compete at the World Championships. And they treat their competitors in a completely different way to the British do. They're treated like athletes. So when we turned up in other countries, it was like, oh my God, it was like being entered into the lion's den. But we worked our way up over the years, and some of the categories got as far as, we did have a British world champion, a chap called Stephen Smart, and a lot of the other categories, the men's artistic team came, I think the last international competition that they did, they came fourth overall in the world. So when you think of the world as a whole, I mean, to come fourth is absolutely fantastic. To say that they were all self-funded, they all put their own time in. And you are competing against people that just do it day in, day out, just to become the best. And they're probably not doing everyday salon work while they're training for a competition, whereas we had to, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to pay for it.
Yeah, I remember when you used to go abroad and come back with medals and medals and medals.
Yeah, it was a good feeling. It was brilliant.
Kind of now that regular competitions have kind of phased out for you and Dad, where do you kind of aim your creativity?
Well, we hope that we can train the next generation. We're both artistic people. My sort of artistry, if you like, at the moment, I'm very much into crafting. I like making soft toys. I like crochet, anything to do with needlework, sewing. And I've sort of gone down that route. I have to do something artistic. Dad's gone more into his photography. He likes doing artistic photography. He likes doing hair photography because obviously we know what to look for. And that was one of the big issues when we were doing editorial work, is if you hired a photographer that didn't know what they were looking for, your photos always ended up looking like a school portrait, whereas we wanted them to look magazine worth. So your dad sort of trained himself to get those really good editorial shots, very arty magazine type shots. And, you know, we've been really proud of some of the models that we've used over the years, and some of the images that he's captured have been absolutely fantastic. And that's another avenue to go down. But he did compete last year at the European Championships during COVID, during lockdown. It was all done online. And it's a good job that he had done his photography, because it was a photographic entry, which meant you didn't actually go and do the model at the time you sent in a selection of photographs of your model. So it was good that we got all the gear and all the know-how to set that up. No medals, unfortunately, but he's been a few years out of the game. So the World Championships are in Paris in November, and that's all going to be still with all the restrictions, that's still going to be a photographic entry. But hopefully the next European Championships and the next World Championships will go back to live competitions. So we'll see. He might have a go. We'll see how much it costs. It's a lot to travel the world these days, especially if you need to take a model, or because it's total look at the end of the day, your model. You've got to have your outfit, your makeup, obviously training, doing the models' colours and paying for their travel, paying for hotels. It does cost a lot. And I think years ago when we were doing it all the time, I think now we reflect back and think, my God, we've spent an absolute fortune just on competing over the years. But it got us where we are now. We feel that we made a name within the industry. People wanted to see our work. We were very, very lucky to work with one of the best artistic teams, the British Hairdressing Squad, probably some of the best hairdressers in the country. And it's been life-changing. It really has. And we've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, finally, and I guess the million-dollar question, and I think I know what the answer to the question is going to be, but do you feel that hairdressing is an art form?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's in you. If you want to be a hairdresser, you'll want to know that you're going to be a hairdresser from a very young age. But you've got to have an artistic eye. You've got to have a passion for colour. You've got to have a passion for how people feel. You want to be able to make somebody's day. And it's not all about just doing somebody's hair. We are psychologists, we are doctors, we are therapists, you name it. You've got to be able to have a conversation with every client, and it can range from sport to knitting to cooking to what's on TV to politics. I think it's an art form, as in changing the way somebody feels about themselves. And, you know, sort of keeping up with fashion and keeping up with Instagram influencers and always keeping on top of your game, really. We spend lots of time researching what's going on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, following what fashion trends are. So I think if you're going into hairdressing, you've got to be that type of person, because your client is always going to want, well, not every client, but lots of younger clients want to have the latest trend, and you've got to know how to do it, what's going on and what's coming next. Because the big question is always, what's the next big colour? What's the next big trend haircut? What's the next big look? What's going to be walking down the catwalk? And we've always made a point of doing our homework and making sure that we know what's happening in the fashion world. Yeah, but you've got to have art in your bones, really. We're a very arty family. We've got two artist children. I was very artistic as a child, as a teenager, and I always knew I was going to do something arty. And I've always treated it as my art form. That is my art. What I create day in, day out, and every client is different. So yeah, it is an art form, but it's also a very, very big passion. Like any artist, it's got to be your life.
Well, thanks for setting aside some time to talk to me today. I didn't know a lot of the early career and then stuff about competing abroad, so this has been really eye-opening for me about what you do for a living.
It's a lot more than you think.
Well, thank you for talking to me. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. And I hope it inspires somebody.
I hope so too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you like this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work in computech.com. Tom Innes was the executive producer.